welcome to the Daily Friend, your lunchtime briefing. That's right. Colleagues here at the Daily Friend, our analysts, our writers, and our opinionistas, who write, of course, for you guys on the Daily Friend website. That's dailyfriend.co.za. You'll find all our content there, news, analysis, and opinion, keeping you abreast and giving you the arguments that you can use in your conversations with friends and family and the like. I hope you guys enjoyed your weekend. I'm Big Daddy Liberty. I'm going to be hosting the show. And, of course, I'm joined in studio by my very able colleagues, chaps who I think you guys are enjoying quite a lot in terms of listening to. We have, of course, Mr. Nicholas Larimer. He's an analyst and writer here at the IRR. Nick, how are you doing, brother man?
I'm very well. And you, Sisa?
Fantastico. And, of course, a voice who you guys are warming up quite nicely to. I do see your comments. We do read your feedback. Is Mr. Gabriel Krauser, a writer and analyst, of course, here at the IRR. Braji, how are you?
How is it, Sisa?
Fantastico, fantastico. Guys, let's hop straight into it. Bit of an international focus today, isn't it? We'll begin, I suppose, in the most topical place. You know, the Americans over the weekend, two horrific shootings in that part of the world, just under 40 people dead combined. A big problem that they have, of course, but one which, sadly, every time it happens, which is not a lot, but when it does happen, the politicians jump in and they politicize the issue, don't they?
Unfortunately, it's we see the same scene every time, which is a sort of the vicious American culture war going, the two sides going against each other. So people say, oh, it's video games' fault. People say, oh, it's the guns' fault. We need to ban these things. The two shootings do seem to be a little bit different. The one in Ohio, it's not entirely clear what the sort of motive for that was, whereas the one in El Paso, Texas, was a deliberate act of terrorism, it appears, by a white supremacist who wanted to kill Hispanics for what he said was the invasion of America by Mexicans.
Mm. And, you know, we absolutely find that abhorrent. You know, any form of racism, supremacist ideology, all that sort of nonsense that really, we don't call out often as a society, don't we, Gabriel?
Yeah, no, it's damnable, and the killer be damned. I think that I don't really know what else to say about that particular thing. It's atrocious. You see people really do fall for these really bad ideas, and they act on it, and innocent lives get lost.
Absolutely, and just as a quick comment from my side, I want to see the full might of the law come bearing down on this chap. He must face, I don't know if there's a death penalty in that part of the world.
Actually, there is. They are considering the death penalty.
But, you know, I think he must face the full might of the law, whatever that is in that part of the world. And, you know, death penalty being a separate debate, but generally speaking, I would want to see the guy rot in jail.
So guy seems to be part of a trend, which is he was directly inspired by the Christchurch mosque shooter.
Jesus.
He's marinating in the same areas on particular websites where there's been a kind of white supremacist group seems to have formed there. It's very decentralized. It's not a proper organization, but there's an ideology of that generally believes that Jews are trying to replace all of the white people with people who are not white. And we're starting to see now, it's almost like the way that ISIS inspired lone wolf attacks. It's a very similar kind of pattern, is that usually an individual who's very kind of isolated from society, this guy had an unhappy home life, goes and decides to devote themselves to this kind of terrorist attack. What's even more disturbing is that he's almost seemed unmotivated. So he wrote this manifesto, which is, you know, sort of usual incoherent rubbish. But it concludes with this, I thought I might as well do a meh shooting and meh manifesto rather than not do one at all.
And for me, you know, and I want to bring it back to sort of classically liberal points here. And I'll share why in particular. You know, we often forget that the state has a very important role to play in the protection of citizens. You know, when we talk about, for example, the three roles of the state, protecting us from foreign aggression, protecting us from internal threats like this douchebag. And of course, you know, mediating our disputes, a good judiciary, et cetera, et cetera. I want to see those three things right now in America play their role in terms of now now a justice system punishing this dude, so that you also make a bit of an example out of him, because it's one thing for us to talk a lot about, you know, other forms of terrorism that, that affect Americans, and actually we're also seeing it here in this country, funny enough. But yeah, anyway, sorry, let me just come back to the point, and I want to pose this to you guys as a question. You will now have the raft of voices who are anti-freedoms generally, from whatever spectrum, whether they're on the right or the left, now come out vying for space on this topic, using this topic. But the one big voice you'll hear is are those who seek to then remove the Second Amendment rights for a lot of Americans, who the overwhelming majority of them are responsible gun owners, but these sort of exception incidents always become a case for them to take away gun rights.
Yeah, well, one thing that we don't like generally is when people overgeneralize in a simplistic way from an example to a broader rule. So because in a free market, sometimes you'll find a business that ends up delivering an inferior product for an inflated price, therefore we need to have price fixing by the government all the time. That's not really a smart way to argue, because someone who looks like this did something bad, therefore all people who look like this need to be put in a gulag or in a ghetto or in a jail. That's not a very good way to argue. Just because one person has used a tool in the most deplorable way doesn't mean that other people who want that tool and want to be able to use that tool in a smart way shouldn't be allowed to do it. So I think that my view is pretty clear. A well-organized government will be one in which people who are insane, people who do not have the capacity to reason, people who do not have the capacity to recognize the value in other human beings in their lives, should not be able to have access to weapons, deadly weapons, and there should be a due process that needs to be followed in evaluating who falls where on the spectrum, that maybe kicks in when you apply to get a gun. But certainly I think there's a very big mistake, and it can be made in the gun question. It can be made in so many different questions of taking an example and then mistaking that for the whole.
And that's the key, isn't it, Nicholas? It's the idea that there should be, it all should happen within the framework of the rule of law and due process.
Exactly. So one of the important things to note is that the correlation between sort of levels of gun ownership in a society and the number of mass shootings is very bad. Mm. This appears to be a very particular cultural problem that the United States has. Mm. And every single one of these shooters is almost directly inspired in some way, originating with the Columbine massacre. Mm. You can trace a lineage of the methods and the way that it's done, like the format of using a manifesto, and there's been quite a lot written on the psychology of that. Mm. But going forward, as Gabriel says, there is a way to not infringe on people's freedoms too heavily, but still have a due process for this. There's the American writer David French has advanced some arguments for how, for example, people who have been found by a court to have domestic violence restraining orders or things like that can lose their right to guns. And then there's been some suggestion of what they call red flag laws, which is basically where the police can make an application to say that this is an individual who they believe is a threat to society. And a court can then review that process and determine whether they are whether they should have access to guns or not.
Yeah, and a point on that, I can't remember if it was the Las Vegas shooting I can't remember which one it was, but one of the more recent, or the Pittsburgh one at the synagogue, one of the more recent shootings, there were red flags that had been raised. There were warnings that had been sent to police and to the FBI to say that this is someone you really need to watch out for.
I think that was the murder in Florida, where the school shooting there, where the shooter had been had multiple encounters with the police and had even himself written to the police.
Yes,
and said,
he'd warned the police himself against himself.
He said, I'm really in a bad place. Yeah. I don't know what I'm going to do. Please help me. And they ignored him.
And so that's something that you should really take seriously.
Chaps, I'm going to move us on. But yeah, before I do, as a show and I suppose as an institute, let's also extend our condolences to the families of those who, were victims of this, both in terms of those who passed away and died and those who are currently injured. And, in some cases, people are fighting for their lives. So we definitely extend our condolences to that. I know we do have an American listenership, small, but but significant enough for us to do that. Guys, as we move on to our next topic, Gabriel, I'm looking square at you on this one because as a institute, we've been fighting the case, fighting against the bad policy proposal of prescribed assets. Very briefly, this is the policy where the ANC as a government, or any government, leftist government really, would appropriate for themselves the power to be able to decide where your savings in the form of a pension or retirement annuity or whatever are spent, or rather invested, and invariably those would go to what we think ailing SOEs to prop them up. This is obviously a very dangerous policy, and we've been fighting the case. In fact, we went to an organization called ASISA, which is the body that looks after all the sort of investment firms in the country, to ask them, what are you doing to protect the pensions and the savings of your clients? But we did this because there's a weird trend we're picking up, a trail of thought that amongst those who are in the industry, who seem to not think there's a problem generally, both in the economy and in the onslaught of bad policy coming their way. And we have a good example you discussed earlier on. Tell us some more about this person.
Yeah. So, I mean, generally the idea is that there are a lot of sheep who seem to think that if they kind of try to bark like a wolf, then they're not going to get chowed. Which is just a silly idea. So wealth managers, pension fund managers who would like to sort of complement the ANC into changing its direction, rather than to speak honestly and critically if criticism is so deserved. So this case is not directly about prescribed assets, but it's about the broader sort of leftist push. So the CEO of the JSE, Nikki Newton-King, has just retired or resigned her position there, and she's just, in my opinion, she's a good example of a kind of corporate head who hasn't been doing her job, insofar as her job means standing up to government pressure and standing up for her investors and standing up for good business. So two little moments in her career to reflect upon now that she's quit as the CEO of the JSE. The first is that in 2016, South Africa had one of the worst years in terms of capital flight, foreign outflows. It looked like Zuma was here to stay. It looked like maybe he wasn't going to be replaced by anyone excepting for his chosen heir. And I think the kind of policy consequences and business consequences of that were clear for all to see. And so approximately 120 billion rand net left this country through JSE foreign equities. Now, that's a hugely alarming fact and an alarming statistic. And as it was happening in the year 2016, the JSE was not reporting the fact. They were actually reporting net foreign inflows for a while. And when this was pointed out and the correction was made, Nikki Newton-King said, don't worry about it. It was just a technical malfunction with the numbers being misreported. And then she said, it's not really a big deal. She said to Bruce Whitfield, I quote, "I'd be surprised if people relied on this single piece of information to make investment decisions." Which is, like, on the one hand, it's true that no smart investor is only looking at one thing. If you're deciding whether to buy Naspers shares or not, you're not just looking at what the foreign equity flows are. But on the other hand, it's crazy to think that this isn't exactly the kind of detail that a lot of investors do look at. It's the kind of thing that Bloomberg News will report on, or Forbes, immediately when looking at sort of regional markets from a global perspective. And Newton King, her role, I think, should have been to stand up and say, look, this is bad news. Look, it's crazy that we misreported on it. We're going to make sure that someone gets fired, whoever was in charge of that part of the JSE division. And we want the government to know that we realize why there's so much foreign outflows, and it's because of increased ultra-left socialist and race nationalist talk. Mm-hmm. So that was a failure on her part, and it's not the only one. Another one is when the EFF under Julius Malema marched up to the JSE's offices to say that they're white monopoly capital and racist, and they must fly out of the country, otherwise they're going to be driven into the sea. to paraphrase, words to that effect, it's not a direct quote. And Nicky Newton-King went to go and receive the JSE's memorandum. Now, I don't criticize her for that. I think that's a good thing to do. You must go up and you must receive the memorandum. If you see they make some good arguments, you must change your tack in order to accommodate the good arguments. If you see they're making rubbish arguments, then you must somehow respond to that in an appropriate way. What she did was to describe the EFF as comrades while receiving the memorandum, and afterwards to describe the event as magnificent, quote. Her word was magnificent.
Sorry, I just need to compose myself, because it's stupefying how you can have people who realize the weight of what they do, right? The responsibility of their work. You know, JSE, where most people's pensions and savings are sort of invested, people wanting growth and returns from that. Ordinary people, we're not talking about mega sort of trillionaire, billionaire type characters here. Yeah? Yeah. And here's a woman who's at the helm of this, essentially pandering to the very people who are saying they're looking to confiscate people's wealth. Yeah. It's a weird little, like, head in sand dynamic we have in this country.
Yeah, or sheep, or, you know, it's a sheep in wolf's clothing.
Absolutely, absolutely.
It's not healthy. It doesn't bode well. But we'll see who replaces her.
Guys, final thoughts. It's a Monday. And how I'm going to sort of leave you guys with it, or what I want to sort of speak to is, what are you going to be looking at in the week, maybe? Maybe you can also just share if there's anything you're going to be writing about, just as a final thought on this Monday edition.
So I've got a couple of things. The first thing is that Gabriel and I, our podcast, Two Crickets and a Thorn Tree, which is a very sort of relaxed, informal discussion about, well, whatever takes our fancy at the time, politics, current affairs, history, philosophy. It's now on iTunes. If you just search for Two Crickets and a Thorn Tree, you'll be able to find it quite easily. And the other thing is, there's some important things to watch in international news. One is the ongoing protests in Hong Kong, which are hotting up, and there might be some sort of serious developments there. And the other is that there is more tension in Kashmir on the border with India and Pakistan, which might result in some conflict as well. So keep an eye out on those two things.
Mm. Gabriel?
Yeah. In terms of international politics, things I'll be looking at also with Nicholas for the podcast on Friday is the Washington has withdrawn from the US-Russia nuclear treaty. Mm. And so basically you should expect there to be medium-range nuclear missiles deployed in Europe pretty soon, which sort of changes the game somewhat. Although the reason they're doing it is because they say this is basically already happening from the Russian side. Domestically, I've got one or two stories that I'm researching that I can't speak about right now, but the public issue that I'm looking at is the Land Panel's report. We've already released quite a lot of analysis of it, and now I think you have this game of the ANC puts it out, or the mouthpiece puts it out, then you have the response, and then you have to see what the response is to the response to test how quickly it'll go through, if it does go through, and where the weaknesses are that we can exploit in order to firstly inform the public, and secondly to produce pressure to stop land expropriation without compensation from becoming an everyday legal authorized reality.
Absolutely, guys. Thank you so much. From my side, you guys can look forward to the Wednesday edition of your lunchtime briefing on the Daily Friend to have Ian Cruikshanks as we revisit some of the economic data. What's the latest? What should you be doing? What should you be looking out for in terms of the economic numbers to protect your savings, your pension? About that, we're still fighting the prescribed assets policy proposal, and I'll share with you some of the latest on that. But otherwise, thank you so much for listening, guys. And remember, you can support the IRR and the Daily Friend by becoming a friend of the IRR, which is our crowdfunding campaign. How do you become a friend of the IRR? Well, you can SMS your name to 32823, and an SMS will cost you 1 rand. Terms and conditions apply. Or find us online at irr.org.za/join, where you can sign up for a monthly debit order of 90 Rand over there. Guys, look out for the Big Liberty Show that comes out this week. We're going to be covering some of the interesting stuff that's been happening, and we will see you on Wednesday. Oh, hey, I nearly forgot. And a big word of thanks to our friends at the Frederick Naumann Foundation for helping us with this episode of the show.
Long live the free market.
No. Anyway, thanks, guys. We'll see you, as I said, on Wednesday.